Well, personally, gratitude is one of the most, it is one of the like cornerstones of my sobriety. Even thinking about it, like, I am so deeply grateful for the opportunities that I've had and for my mentors and for the people I work with who are so courageous and who open themselves to me and model how to be these like beautiful, vulnerable people. And gratitude is the thing that just like wells up. It's like falling out of my eyeballs right now, right? Like I'm so grateful. And allowing myself to feel that gratitude is something that keeps me coming back to this very hard work and this very challenging world that we live in.
Stay connected to gratitude. Hit the follow button right now and join thousands of listeners tuning in each week. We're the Gratitude Seekers. Come join us. Hi, Gratitude Seeker. Welcome to a new episode of the Gratitude Podcast. Our guest today is the founder of West Coast Anxiety Clinic, a clinical licensed social worker, and an anxiety and OCD specialist. She has been involved in research at the University of Washington, a guest lecturer at the Harvard University, and appeared on a number of popular TV shows from Headline News, The View, to Oprah. Today we'll be exploring the impact that digital overuse has on us. And it's a really, really big topic for me because I know how impactful it actually is in our life and how it actually prevents us from experiencing more gratitude. So Jenny Ketchum-Crooks, welcome to the Gratitude Podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm really, really excited and honored to be here.
So am I to have you here. And yeah, I'm really curious on where our conversation will go and all of the things that we will learn together alongside our listeners that are from all over the world. And we get to talk with a lot of people from all walks of life. Thanks to the digital age we live in. But of course, I wanted to start with this because of course, there are so many benefits to technology. The fact that we can have a conversation, even though we are quite far away, even though our listeners are quite far away from each other, they can still feel like they're part of the story, like they're here with us. I think this is an amazing thing that we can do, but also it's something that's very challenging nowadays, and I'm really curious to find out more about this and how it actually impacts our mental health. So let us know a little bit more about you and we'll take it from there.
Sure. So I am, as you mentioned, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I run a group practice that focuses on anxiety and OCD treatment. I'll also include trauma and PTSD in that anxiety umbrella. And so I work with a lot of people who find themselves using their mobile devices or smartphones, some sort of like digital interaction as either an escape or as a way to feel connected, right? And one of the things that I noticed early on in my career is that it was coming up pretty frequently, right? Where like my socially anxious clients would like revert back into their phones in these like moments of anxiety. And there was this sort of like superficial understanding that like, oh, well, no, this really helps me in this situation because I don't know what to do. So I just like dip into my phone real quick and then like I'm good to go. But what it actually does is it prevents you from learning how to be in that uncomfortable situation, right? You get into an elevator, you don't know whether to stare at the wall or the numbers or talk to the person next to you, right? And so you just go into your phone and do a quick scroll, and then you're out of there, right? But if you don't do that, you have the opportunity to learn, can I actually tolerate being in an elevator with someone that I don't know and not know where to look? Like, all of that uncertainty, we get to learn something about ourselves. And I see it, similarly with a lot of my clients who have body dysmorphia, right? Where there is this feeling that body just isn't quite right, that there's something wrong with it. And then they hop online and they're exposed to all of these really curated body forms and not even like deep fakes, just like a hint of a filter. And it's so deceptive. It's so, it undermines this like sense of stability that we have in our own experience of our own bodies. It's like, well, shoot, like, am I doing something wrong? Like, what makeup are they using, right? Like, what if I could just get it right? Or for my other clients who have like maybe generalized anxiety, right? Like, you get online and you see all of these things you could be doing, or all these things you should be doing. And you touched on it in this really subtle way, which is that it takes away from everything that you are doing, right? You get locked into that comparing mind. And instead of being able to attend to all of the beauty that is in your own life, or even all of the pain that is in your own life, you get sucked into this otherworldly place that just takes over everything. And so, I also see it with OCD is another common thing, right? Where like, as a form of reassurance, or, I mean, we've all played Dr. Google, right? Like, we have all gotten on and been like, is it cancer? Am I dying, right? But this can be really detrimental for our mental health, because you will always find what you're looking for. And the answer is always yes. The internet will always say you have cancer if you continue down that hole. And so in terms of the work that I get to do, I put almost every single one of my clients on some kind of digital diet, right? And not necessarily abstinence-based, but it's really about, I don't even want to use the word diet. We do a nutritional assessment of your digital consumption, right? Like, what are the things in your life that are fruits and veggies, that are the proteins, you know, and really nourish you? And what are the I love hot tamales. I have a little bit of a problem, but like, what are the hot tamales, right? Like, what is just the empty, but like kind of fun candy, and you get a little bit of a hit. Sometimes you get a spicy hot tamale, but you know, it's not as spicy as you ever want it to be, but sometimes you get a spicy one and you get a little hit, right? And so, so in terms of the work that I get to do, it's really pretty beautiful, because what I'm starting to see is that the way in which we experience and use our devices really has an effect on the way we experience our lives, right? And so, I try and teach my clients to be more mindful of that. I try and be more mindful of that myself. I am also a human who is using a smartphone. I have one on each side of me right now, you know, and it's just, moving with intention changes everything.
Definitely. I agree. And I think this topic is so important, because it's omnipresent. Like, I see myself doing this. I see a lot of people, even older people, that are doing this. Like, they're taking their phone everywhere they are, everywhere they go. And it's like it's part of us somehow. And since this is a reality, I think it's very important for us to get educated and to find ways of dealing with this, of managing this in a healthy way. So, for instance, one of the challenges that I have personally is when I'm really tired, I tend to default into like mindless scrolling sometimes. Mm-hmm. And when I catch myself doing that, it's really challenging to just, okay, stop it when I'm tired, when I'm okay, when I have enough mental and emotional energy. It's okay. I can make better decisions. I can do other things that help me rest, that help me replenish. But one of the challenges that I've seen is this one. So how can we not fall into that trap?
I mean, that is the age-old question, right? Like how do we prevent our brains from making the silly mistakes that they make, right? So I think about it a little bit like the game Chutes and Ladders. Have you ever played Chutes and Ladders? It's this American game, and it's I think ages 3 and up is the pitch, but basically you have to make it all the way to the finish line. It's on these little squares, and some squares have ladders that climb you up further along the path, and then some squares have slides that slide you down the path, mm-hmm. right? And I think of our smartphones like this game, because sometimes you land on something that is a ladder, right? Like, for example, I am trying to learn Spanish. I love languages. I don't want to be that the like stereotypical American who speaks English and like tries to enter the world. You know, like I it's a little cringy for me. And so I really want, like, it's important to me to be a global citizen and to be respectful of other cultures. And so I really want to learn Spanish. And my smartphone can be a ladder to learning Spanish, right? Like, I don't have to leave the house. I don't have to do anything. Like, I mean, it's a low bar for entry. I have to practice, but I can really plug into this very values-oriented activity, right? But one step to the right, once I'm at the top of that ladder and I've done my Spanish lesson, one step to the right, you know, there's a chute that is like, it is a fast slide back down to the bottom where I don't even mean to click into something else, but my brain just makes a silly mistake and then I'm somewhere else doing something else. And then, you know, the slot machine that is all of the algorithms and all of the apps, they keep us sucked in, right? And so I go there for something that's important, which is one of the reasons why it's really, really tough to point to this thing and say, it's so bad, right? Like, this is so bad. It's like, it's not so bad. It is amazing. And we as humans with our silly human brains are so susceptible to silly human brain errors. And this device knows that. And the people who make it know that, right? And so, I think that note about sometimes I'm so tired and I find myself mindlessly scrolling, you know, end of the day, brain has done all the thinking it can for the day. It is out, it's tapped out. And we just want something that is easy and sort of engaging, but not too engaging, just the Goldilocks of vapid entertainment, right? And so, yeah, does the smartphone provide that? Yes. And what are we being exposed to while we're engaging in that? That's always the question, right? Like, what do you end up seeing in those mindless moments?
Yeah, it's true. And it's a really good point, actually, because we can be mindful when we are more rested, when we can think about, okay, I'm just going to unfollow this page or this person or this news channel or something like that. That's actually not bringing value to my life, and prepare ourselves, right, for those moments when we know we are weaker. And if we know that we're going to do this, at least we can have more positivity and things that actually uplift us, even though it's something that it's less than ideal, but we know it's going to happen nevertheless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of my weaknesses, here's the list. Donuts. I have donuts, anything pastry, really, anything with flakes and butter. I'm going to have a hard time saying no. Ice cream, like pints of ice cream, problematic. and hot tamales. Hot tamales are another, like, oh God, if there's hot tamales in that, I don't know. I mean, my dad loved them. My grandpa, like everybody on the Ketchum side of my family loves hot tamales. And so it has, hot tamales end up being this, like, not only this like naughty little delight that adds no nutritional value to my life, but also this way of like connecting with my heritage, right? Like hot tamales goes back through the decades. And if any of those things are in my house, I'm gonna have a really hard time saying no, right? So they either have to be in my house in very like moderated amounts, right? Like I cannot have a full bag of hot tamales. I'll get the little box sometimes, which has, it has four servings in there. So I know if I end up binging on hot tamales, it's only four servings. But if I get a bag, it's like, that's like 10 to 12 servings. And like, that's, there's a line, Jenny, you know, or with donuts, like we can have enough donuts for every person in my house to have one donut. That is a reasonable, there are no circumstances under which we actually need a dozen donuts in my house, right? And the same with pastries. And so, you know, that this, the, in psychology, we call it environmental controls, right? And so like we make modifications in our environment to support the fact that brain is going to slide into easy decisions at some point. We're going to get decision fatigue. We're not going to want to make a decision, and we're going to do the thing that's easiest, which is to say, yes, I will have another handful of hot tamales because here they are, right? And so, yeah, what are the things we can do when our mind is a little bit sharper, when we are attending a little bit more flexibly, and when we are aligned with our values, right? What's important to me? My health is really important to me. So even in the grocery store, do I actually need to buy hot tamales? The answer is probably no. Maybe on the anniversary of my dad's death, right? As like a, like I get a really big, it's an alarmingly large burrito smothered in green sauce with cheese. It's not recommended for daily consumption, right? So like on the anniversary of my dad's death, getting that burrito and a box of hot tamales, that would be a really special form of connection. But do I need that in my house all the time? Probably not. And we probably don't need all the stuff in our smartphone all the time either. It gets tough to choose.
That's true. But I'm also really curious how you got to study this topic, and what was your journey with this?
So I'm just over 12 years sober. I am prone to behavioral addictions myself, and I a number of years ago, before I became a psychotherapist, I was a porn star and a porn director, right? And I did a reality rehab show called Sex Rehab with Dr. Drew, because I thought it would be hilarious. I thought it would be so good for my porn career. And it never really occurred to me going into it that I wouldn't have access to things like Jack Daniels or marijuana or cocaine. You know, it's like, oh, this is for sex. Like, of course you can't have sex with anybody, but like certainly they will still have cocktail hour, right? Like certainly that will be part of this. That was not part of rehab at all. And so there was a certain like naivete going into that. But I ended up in this rehab and working with a bunch of really wonderful mental health clinicians. And in those early days of sobriety, I started to realize that I had spent my entire young adult life cultivating this identity of a porn star, and nobody called me Jenny. I had no relationships with anybody who called me Jenny. And so in the rehab, people started calling me Jenny, and it was so disorienting. And there was this aha moment where it's like, oh, geez, like I'm going to die, Jenny. I'm not going to, you know, go to my grave as this porn persona, right? Like 80, 90-year-old porn stars, not, I mean, I'm sure there's a market for it somewhere, right? And there's a lot of beauty in sexiness and aging, right? And so I don't want to say that. And also, that's just typically not what is being marketed right now. And so I had this moment of clarity where I realized I needed to leave the adult business. And the production company covered a bunch of my therapy afterwards. They looked at me and were like, oh, we have opened a can of worms here. Like, we're so sorry. We will go ahead and pay for some therapy. I had no money because I was leaving porn and I had quit and cut off all ties. And so I ended up seeing therapists, two therapists, a woman named Jill and then a guy named Dr. Reef for about 2 or 3 years after I left the adult business. And they both saw me for free after the money ran out, continued to support me, continued to see me pro bono. And my life just, I mean, it changed beyond comparison, right? Like, I think there were a lot of the same value, like the same values that I have in me now that drive me toward connection and vulnerability and like teaching and learning. That was all present in my work as a porn star too, right? So like there is that consistent sense of self that, but I'm doing real different stuff today, my friend. Like my life looks really different, right? And so I went back to school and decided that I too wanted to be part of somebody's life-changing journey, right? So I became a therapist. And what brought me to this work specifically with the book, Look Up, my daughter, she's now 6. At the time, she was about 11 months old. And we were, it was Super Bowl Sunday, we had some friends over and we were watching football and I had my phone in one hand. And, you know, sometimes those like errant thoughts just pop into your head and suddenly you find yourself somewhere else, right? Because you've attended to it. And so the thought that popped into my head was like, I wonder what Snooki from Jersey Shore is doing right now. Like, I wonder what happened to her. Like, where, how is she, you know? And so I started attending to that thought and trying to figure it out, like doing this like deep dive on Snooki and the Jersey Shore and, you know, why is Ron, I don't know, so shady. And while I was doing this deep dive on Jersey Shore people, which also love Mike, the situation, so proud of him. I missed my daughter's first step, right? And it was like this small moment that for most of us as parents just sort of fades into the background of early parenting, right? Like not a lot of us can remember that thing, but I remember missing it. Right? And everybody in the room saw her take this step. It was just from the coffee table to a chair. She let go for a second and took that little step and then latched on again. It was so quick. And I was heartbroken. You know, like this thing that's never, like it's, you get to slice the cake once. That's it. The first slice. And so it was one of these moments where I was like, ah, like I'm doing the thing again, right? I just go on autopilot. And I did it with my drinking. I did it with weed. I did it with I do it with exercise. I have this capacity to do more and to take more and more, 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 and to go beyond the point of feeling good, right? And like I was doing it with the phone too. It's like, oh, I need more info, more Snooki, you know? And I thought, well, there's got to be something out there to like help me get off of autopilot with my phone use. And so I looked into, there were a few like digital detoxes and like they were very much, or you know, Cal Newport has a really great digital minimalism book. And they all sort of oriented towards either getting rid of it or like really it seemed more abstinence-based than harm reduction or like reorientation around use, right? Like I am accepting that this thing is part of our lives. This thing is a part of my life, right? It is unrealistic. It's cute for me to be like, oh, I'll get a dumb phone and I'll do this and this and this, right? Like it's just unrealistic. And so I really wanted something that would help me change the relationship with my device, right? Something that would help me learn how to use it more mindfully, how to use it more intentionally and in a values-oriented way, and how to get off of autopilot, and how to not just get off of autopilot with my phone, but how to get like into active participation in the rest of my life, right? Like there's something happening inside of me where I find myself sucked into this easy, low entry thing. And I want a much bigger life than that. And I didn't see anything like it. I didn't see any books out there that really fit the bill. So I started creating an 8-week, I called it mindfulness-based tech reduction. And that was, it's really formatted around Jon Kabat-Zinn's mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is this 8-week stress reduction program that was originally designed for people with chronic pain. And it's a beautiful, beautiful meditation-based program. And so I started designing this idea around his work and then around mindfulness-based relapse prevention, which is an adaptation of Kabat-Zinn's work, but focused on behavioral addictions. And so I put together this curriculum, and then I started to think about how important this could be for people and how an 8-week curriculum might not actually get it into the people's hands who need it most. It might not be the most accessible way to provide this information. And so I turned it into a book, and now it publishes on July 2nd. And I'm just a little bit sick about how nerve-wracking that whole process is, but profoundly grateful. All the twists and turns that led to here.
I can imagine. I know the process of actually bringing a book into the world is really long and challenging in many ways. And yeah, it's wonderful when you get to actually experience this and to see it through. So I wanted to circle back a bit to what you just mentioned about the fact that when we are too much on different devices, we tend to miss important moments. And I think this relates beautifully with gratitude. Like I think there's actually a viral picture of an elderly woman that just looks at some kind of spectacle or parade or something like this, and all other people are with their phones and they're filming it. And I think this is a really good picture, like a really good image for us and for our listeners to think about. Like, she's enjoying it in a way in which we were built to enjoy it. Like, sometimes I think when we are experiencing beautiful things, we are so afraid of missing them, of not getting all of it in, or wanting to share with other people, that we forget to be present actually. Yeah. And to experience that. And I think it's something to think about for our listeners, that we could at times just try and be present, even though we might not be able to share the actual picture or video or something like that. It might just be us sharing that experience, that emotion, that thing that we saw. And I think that brings more connection, like deeper connection, and more gratitude. So I'm also really curious on your take on gratitude. How do you see it? How do you experience it?
I think for me, both personally, well, personally, gratitude is one of the most, it is one of the like cornerstones of my sobriety. Even thinking about it, like, I am so deeply grateful for the opportunities that I've had, and for my mentors, and for the people I work with who are so courageous and who open themselves to me and model how to be these like beautiful, vulnerable people. And gratitude is the thing that just like wells up. It's like falling out of my eyeballs right now, right? Like, I'm so, so grateful. And allowing myself to feel that gratitude is something that keeps me coming back to this very hard work and this very challenging world that we live in. Because there are these moments, these glimmers that are so brilliant and so filled with light. And I, you know, like my daughter's first step, I don't want to miss it. I don't want to miss those moments. And, you know, I think there can be a thing that happens where, like, so I practice this form of therapy called acceptance and commitment therapy. It's ACT for short. And it looks at these different processes where we get inflexible. And when we're inflexible, we suffer with mental health issues. And one of our processes that gets inflexible is present moment awareness, right? So like you were saying, that woman watching the parade and everybody looking at their phones, right? Like the people looking at their phones, what our brain does is it remembers the picture of the phone. It remembers what the phone captured. But that old woman is exposed to every single like stimulus that is out there, every sound, every smell, every sight. She can see the clouds, she can see the ground, she can that peripheral view. All of her senses are awake and open and active, right? And that is the thing where we are open to connection, right? If we're in that phone storing it for later, we're not attending to right now, right? And right now is where gratitude has this way of bubbling up, right? Like, I can't be grateful for something that's going to happen in the future because it hasn't happened yet, right? Like, that is a time that doesn't exist. I can be profoundly grateful for things that have happened in the past, and it is often the things that I've been present for that I'm grateful for, right? I am grateful. I'm not grateful that I missed my daughter's first step. I am grateful that I took that pain and let it touch me because it really shaped a lot of my behavior moving forward, right? And so when it comes to being grateful, right? Like, what are we talking about? For me, I think we're talking about being able to recognize how important something is to you and being able to honor it at that level of importance, right? Allowing it to be that meaningful to you. Early on in my sobriety, my sponsor, I was part of an anonymous program that used sponsorship. That's fine. My sponsor had me doing a gratitude list, which is a really common practice for a lot of anonymous programs. And I would send her these sort of like rote, basic, I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for my friends. I'm great. You know, this sort of very basic thing. And I remember she pushed back at one point and was like, do you do the dishes by hand? And I was like, no. And she goes, are you grateful for your dishwasher? And it was this quiet moment inside of me where it's like, oh my God, I am grateful for the dishwasher. Like, this device is so important to me, right? And then I looked around my home and I was like, I remember that moment because I was just filled to like the brim, like falling out of my eyeballs, filled with immense gratitude and love for all of these silly inanimate things that made my life so, like my mop, my Swiffer. I was like, I am so grateful for my, that I don't have to get down on my hands and knees and clean this floor. I can just jet it and then, you know, like do the next part of my, and then that experience became so much richer and so much more meaningful. And I actually looked forward to Swiffering my floors because it was this profound experience of gratitude. It was, oh man, like how lucky am I to have this thing in my life that makes it easier for me to be a human. Gratitude is everything for me.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And I think this is like the actual essence of gratitude, the emotion that you showed, that you felt, that you shared with us. And also it's just going so deep into something so simple.
Yeah.
You know, like we tend to think that gratitude is a lot about the big things and wonderful achievements that we have throughout life, but when we realize these small things that we don't even think about much that are actually making our lives so much better, and we can appreciate them deeply, there is like infinite potential for gratitude when we look at things from this point of view. And I'm also curious how you use gratitude in your work as well. I know that it's a part of the work you do also.
Yeah. You know, I think when people initially come to work with me, a lot of my clients will use gratitude as a way to try to minimize their pain. And that's not it, right? Like they'll come in and they'll say, well, you know, I had this horrible thing happened and I'm suffering in this way. And, you know, but I should be thankful. I should be thankful for everything that I have. Right. And there's such a realignment and a creating space, right? Like your pain is worth holding gently, right? And with love and tenderness. And that's always the first move, right? And then it becomes an act of gratitude and even forgiveness for the thing that caused this pain, right? Like I am so grateful that I had a smartphone to see that, like, oh, I'm falling into this trap again where I don't pay attention to my life, right? It could have been something bitter. Could have been heroin, Jenny, you know, could have been cocaine again. It was an innocuous little smartphone and it showed me this moment of insight into the things I'm missing, right? And so with all of my clients, when we see how you can be both grateful and profoundly sad at the same time, how there is space in you for all of that, you don't have to just be grateful and use your gratitude to tamp down any sorrow or unhappiness or discontent you might feel, right? Like gratitude doesn't mean you don't want to change things. Gratitude doesn't mean that something was okay. Gratitude doesn't mean you're condoning something, right? It is an accoutrement, right? It is something that goes with something else. And often for me, gratitude is something that comes with some pain, right? Like it is like the dishes, right? I am so grateful for bright, sunny dish soap. I have this like Meyer's lemon scented dish soap, and it is the most brilliant smell. And it's so simple. And also, I get to smell it when I'm doing the dishes. I don't want to do the dishes. I want to do something else, right? It's always a matter of like, how do we allow our internal experience to be big enough to hold all of it, right? Like it doesn't have to be one or the other. You don't have to be grateful or unhappy. Grateful or it's like, no, you can be sad and grieving and grateful and angry and confused and excited. You can feel all of that at once. So that's always the first step is helping somebody become spacious enough to have any experience that shows up. And then there's room for gratitude. When you're spacious, there's room for all of this like human emotion stuff that exists. From there, I might do like a gratitude practice. And I always have people look for like really small things that just blow them away, right? Like something they can savor, like dish soap, right? And so there's a form of meditation in it where it's this like, I think it's Kabat-Zinn who says the small things, maybe they're not small, right? Like the little things, maybe they're not so little, right? And so it is this mindfulness practice of attending to the thing that's happening right now that seems so little, but it isn't. Yeah. Yeah. But anytime somebody comes in and gives me the like, well, I shouldn't feel this because I should just feel grateful. We take gratitude off the list.
Oh,
it's like, oh,
I totally agree. And I actually wanted to get back to that. And just this idea of I should feel grateful. That doesn't work. Like it never does. It just might be someone else's voice inside your head telling you that you should be grateful. Well, actually, it doesn't work that way. This is, in my opinion, and the experience that I have is actually shame rather than gratitude. It's like you should be ashamed that you're not grateful, so you should be grateful, but doesn't connect you with gratitude in any way. But I also love that you shared this beautiful perspective of encompassing all of our emotions and being aware that we are actually complex beings that have all kinds of emotions. And the more we are actually able to feel them, we are also more able to feel the gratitude as well. And it connects beautifully to what we talked about in the beginning with the elevator, with feeling that uncomfortable feeling being in an elevator with other people, not running away from it. Because when we get into the habit of experiencing that, it's easier for us to experience gratitude as well. So, yeah, I think this is a really wonderful perspective that we can all think about. And I also loved what you shared about that small thing. And I was thinking that just for our listeners, the fact that they are listening, that they have this capacity to listen to our voices, to understand this conversation, to really get new ideas. This is something really simple, but it can have a really profound impact, and it's something that that you as a listener can definitely feel grateful for and appreciate in this moment.
So, well, and us as speakers, like, how grateful am I to be able to share these moments with you and with your listeners, right? Like, in some place where I have no idea, I get to be with someone I've never met, and I get to share a moment of like profound beauty and like reflection with someone that I might never meet. And yeah, there, gratitude is like this, like I think about the emotions sort of like in their, in like how they get in, like how do they get into the house, you know? And like with, you know, what we often call negative emotions, which aren't negative, they're just a little uncomfy. We kind of like to close the door on them, right? Like they show up to the house party, but we like to close the door. We're like, no, not you. No sadness. No, right? But they get in anyway. You know, they come in the windows. They sort of like seep underneath the door frame. But like gratitude's big. Gratitude is a big emotion, and it needs a wide berth. It needs an open door to get through. And like, if our listeners, and if we can open ourselves just fully to all of the emotions, including the ones that feel a little bit uncomfy, then gratitude can just barge its way in and take up as much space as it needs to. So cool.
I love this picture. And it helps us see so much easier how it actually works, and because it's something very natural, like we are very aware of what we bring in or who we bring into our house, right? Mm-hmm. So I really love this picture, because once we choose to become more aware, and also become aware of the fact that there is enough place for all of the emotions, and it's up to us to have a really different perspective on that. Yeah, I love that. So we're nearing the end of our time together, and I wanted to ask you, where can people get in touch with you? Where can our listeners get your book?
I'd love to hear from your listeners. So you can reach out to me directly at my group practice. I'll give you my direct email, which maybe that's a mistake, but maybe it will be a profound gratitude moment for future Jenny when she starts getting emails from people she's never met. So you can reach me at jenny@westcoastanxiety.com. That's J-E-N-N-I-E. And then you can follow me. It's silly to say you can follow me on Instagram. I don't really do a lot there, to be honest. So it's one of those like post inspirational quote here kind of engagement things. But you can follow us there. And then I have this book coming out called Look Up. It is available to purchase on Amazon starting July 2nd. And it's a 30-day challenge that'll help you get unstuck from your phone and jump back into your life. And I really hope you take on the challenge, and I really invite you to open yourself to what you might learn in it, and just how grateful you will be to yourself at the end of it.
Definitely. I love this idea. I love this challenge. And I think it's something that we all need to do one way or another to help ourselves to be more present in our lives. Because unlike, I just wanted to mention this, that you said that you talked about heroin and all kinds of other drugs. This is one that's actually so easy to get into. Mm-hmm. That it's so hard to get out of. And I think it's wonderful that that you've put together such an opportunity for people to overcome this and to actually experience more of life the way we used to experience before having all of this technology. And yeah, thank you so much for being here with us, for sharing all of your wisdom, and for being so present and open.
Thank you for having me. This was a really beautiful experience, and I really appreciate you.
Hey, Gratitude Seeker, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this interview. I really appreciate it. And if you could think of one person that would also benefit from it, share it with them. It might actually be the inspiration that they need to make their day, or maybe even their life, much better. Thank you so much once again. This has been Georgian Benta. Don't forget to keep seeking and spreading gratitude.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Are you experiencing more lack in your life than you used to? Unfortunately, some things are not in our control, but we can control how we see them. Join me on a 7-week journey from lack to abundance through gratitude. Go to georgianbenta.com/abundancecourse. That's georgianbenta.com/abundancecourse to join me now.